Guy's like, oh, he's going to get hit by that bridge, and he ducks down, and instead the bridge is demolished by this man who's made of fucking iron. Yeah.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
He was found in his hotel room, impaled upon a large electrical device. Our surgeons did what they could, but it took them 2 hours just to get the smile off his face.
This is Recotopia, episode 20. Today's big recommend is going to be Top Secret. I'm Chris Atkinson.
I'm Jeremy Scott.
And it's been a while. Hopefully not too terribly rusty, whatever. We do our thing, right? But you acknowledge...
Whatever, who cares? Yeah, who cares if we're rusty?
Nobody gives a shit. Jeremy acknowledged the chat. Good to see you guys again. There was a comment in Patreon just a day or so ago that was like, I hope there's nothing wrong with Chris and Jeremy. They haven't done Recotopia forever. And I was like, whoa. I guess they didn't see those messages that we were coming back on the 28th, but
it's hard to reach everybody with announcements really is. Like that.
Yeah. Anyway, what are our small recommends today?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
I'm going to open with my cucumber salad that I made yesterday and about
your cucumber salad.
This is a food recommend. I will tell you right off, I am a cucumber junkie, always have been.
Okay, I am not, so this is interesting for me to hear.
All right, well, if you hate cucumbers, you're not going to dig on this at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I will eat those things. I'll slice them up, put some salt and pepper on them, and eat them straight. But this, summertime, it's hot, and this is a refreshing, light, healthy side dish or snack, and it's super simple. I just threw 3 cucumbers... sliced them with a mandolin. Don't chop your fingers off. I took cherry tomatoes, cut them all in half. I cut up a red onion. I cut up a shallot. Shallots are magic little balls
of onion
and garlic. I love
shallots. Yes, shallots are amazing.
Yep. And then I had some fresh dill and some fresh basil that I chopped up.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh herbs.
How many like this salad?
Yeah, it's good, I'm telling you. So you mix all that in a big bowl, and then in a separate bowl, you mix a half a cup of water, rice vinegar or white wine vinegar. I used a little of both. A splash of olive oil, a splash of lemon juice, salt, and pepper, right? And then you pour that over and mix well and put it in the fridge for 2 hours. I had some last night. I left my wife a note. That said, holy fuck, that cucumber salad was awesome. So hit me up later on Twitter if you want the recipe or more guidance. It's my first time making a cucumber salad where I didn't follow somebody else's recipe. I just made my own thing, and it was perfect. Anyway, there you go. That's my first small recommend. Cucumber salad.
That motherfucker's tasty. All right. This may be my first non-movie recommend.
Ooh.
I have been doing a little bit of traveling over the past couple of months. I went to Arkansas to see my niece graduate college. I went to Vegas just recently. Both trips, I listened to this album that I have listened to many times because it's great, but I think on these trips it sold me as something truly great. You and I both love Manchester Orchestra.
Yes.
The songs that are on Sirius XM are great. The songs that are on the albums as a whole that you don't get to hear on Sirius XM are phenomenal as well. And I'm going to recommend the album The Million Masks of God, which was their recent one. Now, I don't know how long ago this actually came out now. It's probably been a year or two since this came out. But I have listened to this album front to back several times. I don't think there's a bad song on it. Manchester Orchestra does this thing where you're like, okay, this is their average, you know, this is going to be their filler song that's on it. And then all of a sudden do something on the song where you're like, oh, this may be my favorite song on the album. I love this. Oh my God. There was a point, because I'm always looking for a way to have something, some sort of music going on with trips with my mother, and you know, I have to drive. When we drive on these long trips, obviously I can't play a lot of the modern music because you know there's a lot of stuff that could be offensive in there or whatever. So
sure,
we play. I usually tune into the 60s Sirius XM mm-hmm. channel and sit there and listen to that. On the way back, I was like, man, I'm just kind of getting tired of all of this. I feel like I've heard every 60s tune there is at this point and everything. And I said, okay, look, Manchester Orchestra, modern music, but inoffensive, mm-hmm. not anything in there. I'm going to play this. My mom loved the album too.
Awesome.
I could hear her like responding to things in the album. Like awesome. I was sitting there and like, she seems kind of hesitant to give it credit for some reason, even though she's sitting there liking it. I could hear her liking it. And I was like, I'm glad that you liked it. And she goes, well, I did like it, you know, like, like begrudgingly admitting that this is it. So, anyway, the Million Masks of God album from Manchester Orchestra, if you haven't heard that, it's not brand new or anything. It's been out for a couple years. I saw Manchester Orchestra at the Ryman here in November. Excellent live band as well. I'm going to recommend this album. Go listen to it. Wow. It's awesome.
Wow. Is this the album that Bedhead is on?
Yes.
That song rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I will have to actually take your recommendation explicitly this week and listen to that album.
Yeah, it's one of those, really, seriously, there's a lot of songs that are on it where you really do think, oh, okay, this is the one where they kind of took the break or whatever, they're filling the album or whatever. And there's always something, it always feels like somebody goes, hey, but what if all of a sudden we did this amazing vocal part here in the middle and just cranked it up to 11. And that's what they always seem to do with these songs. So
it's funny. I see a lot of people will say about a particular album, there's not a bad song on it. And I almost never believe those people.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is maybe I am the odd man out. My wife will tell you, I have a very strong connection to music and memory. I really love music, but even my favorite albums, there are songs that I will skip for mm-hmm. the most part, mm-hmm. or at least often. But with this, every Manchester Orchestra song I've ever heard has been great. So I actually believe you here, and mm-hmm. I will give this thing a spin.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to stick in the realm of non-movie related recommends and hopefully redeem myself with the audience members who hate cucumbers.
I don't know. The cucumbers are getting a lot of play in the comments, so, you know.
By moving to Mountain Dew.
Ooh, now, Mountain Dew.
The world is a scary, shitty place. But as far as Mountain Dew is concerned, we're living in a golden age where every few weeks there's a new flavor somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of them are exclusive to particular restaurants or convenience centers, which I don't like because I'm not going to go to Buffalo Wild Wings just to taste your new Mountain Dew flavor,
right?
Even though I love blackberry and you put blackberry in your Mountain Dew there and I should love that drink, I'm not going to do it. Maybe that's the Applebee's one, but I'm mm-hmm. not going there either.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the convenience stores they do exclusive ones with aren't near me. And it's
mm-hmm.
frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Then
mm-hmm.
they came out a year or so ago with an exclusive for Kroger. And it's called a smashed thrashing apple, and it's an apple tinged Mountain Dew, and I hate it.
Yeah.
I did not like it. I have tried a couple of they have Baja spinoffs. That one's like pineapple coconut. Did not like that one. The other one was mango something. I think I liked that one. There's actually a Mountain Dew Outpost, a physical building over in Appalachia in East Tennessee.
Really?
Yes, where the original Mountain Dew logo, if you remember, is like an old prospector guy walking down a mountain. and their origins are in that part of the country. So they've built this place called an outpost. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's a destination. It's not something you're going to pass on the way. And at that place, they have experimental flavors that you can try. And I assume if they are well received, they might eventually come to the
place. Mm-hmm.
But today I want to talk to you about one that you can only buy on Mountain Dew's website. Which is kind of a scam because after paying for the six-pack, I had to pay for shipping, which was twice as much as the six-pack.
Yeah.
And if they just sent that shit to a grocery store, I would have saved, like, I don't know, $15.
That's what I'm saying. You got to buy this shit in bulk, man.
But the new one is called Mountain Dew Typhoon. And it is a dew infused with fruit punch.
Okay.
And I love it.
Really?
I am going to get scammed into paying for shipping again because six cans are not going to do it. cucumber Mountain Dew.
Oh, yeah. That's the stuff.
I see you, Snarky, so. Don't think they won't. Over in Japan, they make Kit Kats with all kinds of weird-ass savory flavors. They make wasabi Kit Kats, and they probably have a cucumber Kit Kat.
Why does that sound amazing?
I don't know, because those wafers are fun to eat, and if you can put the flavors in there in a way that makes, I don't know.
Yeah,
they have like hundreds and hundreds of them. I don't know why we can't get that shit here.
Yeah. I like Mountain Dew. I like, and you won't believe this, but I like Diet Mountain Dew. But there's a very specific Diet Mountain Dew that I like. How do I like a specific Diet Mountain Dew? How are there a variety of? There are. You can get it in a can. You can get it in a 12.8-ounce bottle. You can get it in a 20-ounce bottle. The 12.8 that comes in the six packs. I don't know what it is, but they taste better than all the other Diet Mountain Dews.
I agree with you. Soda, soft drinks taste different depending on their packaging. I completely agree.
Yeah, yeah. So I buy a ton of those.
They're correcting me that he wasn't an old prospector, of course. He's a moonshiner, which makes even more sense.
Who was a moonshiner?
The original Mountain Dew logo.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. I didn't even know that we had brought up the original Mountain Dew guy. Didn't have any idea of that.
That's all right. I missed that part. From Jeremy, get some cucumber salad, whip it up, get you a Mountain Dew Typhoon, pay too much for shipping, and that's a meal.
Yeah. It's so weird, though, that they have a drink that you can get off their website as long as you pay way too much for shipping. Like, how are they expecting to test this? I guess if they believe in it enough, like enough people buy it, willing to pay that shipping for it, that's how they know. But there's going to be so many people who would like to drink that who are going to balk at the shipping cost. So I don't understand.
I think it's just another arm. I think they're going all in on exclusivity. And you can only get this here. You can only get this there. And so whoever... they hooked me. Every time I see a new one, I'm like, oh, can I get there? Should I go to that and try that Mountain Dew? And so I think people that... that are dumb like me are just going to pay it. But I think it's just another layer of exclusivity. This one is only online. That one is only at the Outpost. This one is only at, Applebee's.
Just
trying to drive excitement to all these. They're all exclusive, but they're all Mountain Dew.
Yeah. All right. We are going to get on a movie track now.
That's good.
Over the past month, I have watched a lot of movies. None of them could probably make Wreckatopia. Jurassic World Dominion, terrible. Lightyear, okay, but not something that I want to usher everybody to go watch or urge everybody to go watch. Seen a lot of stuff. It just, whatever. And then I finally saw a movie. We had a movie night with the people I have the movie night with once a month. And one of the movies I had already seen, and I didn't think I was going to recommend this movie because the first time I watched it, I was like, I can see why people like this, but I didn't like it really. I didn't like it all that much. And then I watched it the second time, and the second time with people, I started picking up on a lot more. And that's the way a lot of movies are, right? We always point that out, where sometimes movies just need a second viewing, or they need to be watched with a different audience. Anyway, that movie is X, a movie that came out earlier this year, written and directed by Ty West. And it's about this group of people who want to shoot a porno out in the middle of rural Texas.
As you do.
And they go, and it's the usual sort of Texas Chainsaw Massacre tropes that are being laid before you. You know, they go to this out of the nowhere place. They stop at a gas station, of course, because you always stop at a gas station in a horror movie. They go to the place. They go to this place. It's the old, very old people who are at this house that they are renting. They're renting out sort of a guest house of some sort out on their farmland. The old guy is a little out of it. He doesn't know what they're here for. They have to be reminded that we rented this house from you. We answered an ad, blah, 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 blah. That's that type of thing going on. Very creepy dude. Married to a very, very old, of course, woman as well. So they're just barely getting around kind of thing. But they assume that they will be left alone in the guest house to be able to shoot their porn. It stars Mia Goth, who's been in a ton of stuff in the past few years. I don't know what her most famous movie is. Is it maybe The Cure for Wellness? I'm not sure. But Mia Goth is in it. It's got Jenna Ortega from The Fallout and Scream in it. It's got Brittany Snow in it. And it's got Kid Cudi, Martin Henderson, if you remember Martin Henderson back in the day. Martin Henderson is the producer of this porn.
Oh, wow.
And so as they stay at this place, it's a slow build to any kind of like horror or violence. And I actually don't want to give away anything that happens in this, but if you get a, if you go along with the kind of the, there's some goofiness to this movie. It's a horror movie. It sets the mood, but there's some goofiness, man. It's some real goofiness. Like, and if you, and it, and if you're, you know, the porn stuff has its goofiness to it. The situation itself has a lot of little moments in it, and found myself kind of laughing a bit, in this movie. And yeah, on the second attempt, I can recommend X. I think it's a movie that a lot of people might dig out there. So movie X.
I have heard good things about this. I may have to check this out. The biggest swing for me, first to second viewing ever, was probably Kids in the Hall Brain Candy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because when I saw it the first time, I just did not like it.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 months later, it came out on video. I watched it again, and I laughed my ass off.
Yeah.
So I don't know what was wrong the first time I watched it. But yeah, that can happen, man. That's a solid movie recommend, which will lead us into our big recommend.
Our big recommend.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
The movie is top secret. This is a movie that David Zucker, Jim Abrahams, and Jerry Zucker made in between their one of their biggest all time Airplane, and their next biggest all time, The Naked Gun. In fact, The Naked Gun might actually be their biggest hit in this, but Airplane is certainly like the one that's maybe considered their best. But Top Secret got lost in the shuffle in all of this. Was not a big hit. And they had struggled. They made the show Police Squad, which would later go on to be The Naked Gun during this time as well. And Police Squad lasted for 6 episodes. And so they made this Top Secret, which had not seen it in a while. I thought was strictly World War II, but it's actually, I think this is set in the 60s, and it's East Germany. It's like the 60s East Germany, because there's a lot of like Beach Boys type music in this.
Elvis
is in this. A lot of these type of things. So this is. It's kind of like a, you know, because it's got the French Resistance in it, even though there's not a real French Resistance, I think, in the 60s. But it's kind of got this World War II vibe, even though it's not World War II.
Well, I mean, it's weird. There's a clock on the wall at the pizza joint that has Hitler on it.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's kind of like a Mickey Mouse clock, yeah.
Yeah, so there's enough to make you... I think it's trying to be multi... era all at once.
Right. And so one thing that stands out about Top Secret is just, I feel like, masterful sight gags. The thing about this movie is that there's a real, like, yeah, the Zucker brothers and Abrahams, they were like really silly. They had a lot of silly moments in their movies and everything. But there were people who were film nerds behind the camera. You can see this type of stuff in Airplane, especially like with the Robert Stack thing where he's adjusting in the mirror, and we think it's the mirror image, and then he walks out of the mirror and stuff like that. Like, they do a lot of like camera tricks and stuff. And so in this one, they're genius sight gags. You could count probably more than 10 or 20 of these that are just insanely good. There's a moment where there's a guy sitting at his desk and his feet are propped up on the desk or whatever. And he stands up and the feet are still propped up on the desk. there's a guy who picks up, you see the phone in the foreground and you think it's big because it's in the foreground, and he comes up and picks up the phone and it's a giant phone. Like the receiver like goes all the way down below his chin and everything. I love the moment where the French Resistance is about to break into that prison, and they do the whole thing where they're like drawing stuff in the sand or whatever. But then what they have is an actual full-scale replica of the prison that just keeps getting more and more revealed as they go through the plan even more, and to the point where not only do they have the same exact cars that are parked in the grass and all this other type of stuff, but they also have a model train that goes by in the middle of it. There is the scene where they jump, they're scaling the castle wall or the prison wall, and the guard falls off of the thing, and he lands on the pavement and shatters into a million pieces. This movie is a masterpiece. Like, you don't ever hear about it. And here's the other thing. We're in a time where people say you can't joke about certain things, without, you can't be funny if you don't joke about certain things, and blah, 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 blah. And I think if you ask David Zucker, he would probably agree with that sentiment. But you look at Top Secret, I counted maybe 3 or 4 gags you couldn't get away with. You couldn't get away with today. Most of the rest of it is stuff that you could get away with today and is hilarious.
It's so silly, like you were saying. Like the humor is inoffensive in most cases, right? It's that kind of stuff you're talking about, or like when he's trying to escape the prison and he goes out the duct and then falls out the other duct back into the prison. It's just, I wrote down, this is the kind of movie that if you pay too much attention to the dialogue, you miss the background jokes.
Mm-hmm.
If you pay too much attention to the background jokes, you miss the dialogue.
Yeah.
Because there's great dialogue where like one of the French guys says to Val Kilmer, oh, what's the word? He's like, he's saying, oh, you've just become, how do you say, indispensable.
Yeah.
And he goes, indispensable.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy goes, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
So you can't. Yeah, it almost demands a second viewing. I'm going to watch it again just because you just all you have to do is pay attention to one part of the screen and you're missing something hilarious on another part of the screen. I was blown away by how much there was to look at and soak in.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just a goofy script, every moment is packed with something. Like even when the dialogue isn't that interesting, there's some people behind him in the pizza restaurant trying to pull a slice of pizza off the pizza, yeah. And the cheese just goes forever, and he's like climbing the stairs behind him, and the girl comes by and pulls it up and ducks under.
Yeah.
And none of that has anything to do with the movie, but it's freaking hilarious.
Yeah, there's an early gag in there where they're showing their progress of their travel, and there's all these dots that show up on the screen, and then it's like all the traffic has all the dots show up. Then Pac-Man shows up and starts eating all the dots, and even eats ghosts and everything. The possibly the most genius part of this movie is the Swedish bookstore part of it, where Peter Cushing plays the Swedish bookstore owner. For those of you who did not know Peter Cushing from, you know, old Hammer films, and of course Grand Moff Tarkin from Star Wars. They go in, Val Kilmer and this woman go in asking about all this stuff, and you can tell there's something off. They're speaking Swedish, quote unquote, but it's got this zip, 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 zip sound. And if you're paying attention, you can kind of realize they're doing all of this backwards. It's a backwards sort of audio. And if you really I don't know if this is backwards or not. Once he blows the dust back onto the book, that's when they're finally letting you in on it. And then of course just hilarious that they're sitting there telling you, oh, this is totally legit, this is how they're speaking, and then just completely by the end of it just decide, eh, this is all going backwards. There's a dog eating food that just goes roop, 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 and just goes backwards in the whole thing. Which, by the way, if you want to, you can go on YouTube and see that whole scene played forwards if you would like, because it's
I am going to because I felt like this, you're absolutely right, this is the cornerstone of the whole movie. This is where they're showing their true genius, because anybody else would have just made this scene and had them speak gibberish and pretend it was Swedish.
Yeah,
but they, in fact, they do this a lot. This scene is the best because it goes backwards, and Val Kilmer, Peter Cushing, everybody in that scene had to act in reverse.
Yeah.
And you might just laugh and go, oh, they're going backwards. But if you think about how they had to actually shoot that in order to accomplish that, it's really complicated.
Look at all the things that Val Kilmer does in there, where he, like, you know, where he's throwing the book onto the top shelf. Yeah. But then he has to do the thing that he does after that. Before that, so like you see him adjust his collar or whatever, like whatever, and then, you know, and it's amazing just to watch the scene go forward, because they're doing the dialogue backwards on the script. So like, you know, like someone answers the question before the question is asked. So yeah, stuff like that. One thing that this movie does, another thing this movie does incredibly well, is it sets up your expectation for something to happen. And we've already talked about a bunch of these already, but sets up your expectation for something to happen and then does something completely different. Like, for instance, when they throw a grenade down into the room and the guy jumps on the grenade to save everybody else, and then it just blows up everybody else.
when the opening scene when the bad guy is standing on the train and then the good guy's like, oh, he's going to get hit by that bridge, and he ducks down, and instead the bridge is demolished yeah. by this man who's yeah. made of yeah. fucking iron.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And yeah, like they're on the train early on, and you see like the, you know, you see the stuff outside start to move because the train is apparently moving, but it's really just the station that's moving.
The station.
And then like, and you see this guy outside in the middle of the woods trying to hold on to a tree because everything outside is moving and not the train. So yeah, it's one of these, it's one of these that, there may be a couple of lulls in this movie, just a couple, not lulls, but lulls, where you're like, okay, it's not that funny, but there are so many more that make up for any kind of lulls that are in it. One of my all time favorites, dialogue gags in this is, it actually just sets up so well with a whole bunch of stuff. First off, Val Kilmer is arrested. There's a cross dissolve. You see him like etching a 20, like one of those marks, those little etch marks on there. He's putting his 20th mark on there. His buddy shows up and he goes, oh my God, thank God you showed up. I've been here almost 20 minutes. And the guy sit down on the bench and he goes, Nick, I've tried everything. I've gone to the German embassy. I've gone to, you know, the government. I've gone to all these different places and all that. And so you're thinking, okay, setting up this whole thing, like trying to get him out of prison. He's like, I've tried everything. I just can't bring my wife to orgasm. And then out of nowhere, he pulls out this anal intruder thing. He's like, have you ever tried this? And the guy's got everything in his cell. He's got a Cuisinart. He's got like, you know, all sorts of stuff in his cell. I'm glad we have this podcast because, we get a chance to bring attention to movies like these. Everybody knows Airplane. Everybody knows The Naked Gun. Very few people, I feel like, know Top Secret. And this is Val Kilmer back in the day where I felt like, yeah, he actually got it. He had a good sense of humor, and he didn't really do much like this after that. And if you watch that documentary, Val, when he's writing about being on this movie, he seemed a little upset that he's actually singing the songs in this. Nick Rivers, he's actually singing the songs. He trained to sing these songs. He was upset that I guess he went through all this training for just some small gags or whatever like that or whatever. He didn't really, and he was just like, I'm on this movie. I'm trying to describe to my friends that it's very hard to describe what movie I'm in or whatever. But you know, so that's him talking about that movie then. So I don't know. It's, it's weird. He's great in this movie, but he doesn't seem to understand everything about what's going on in this movie.
Yeah, it's weird that you can get that kind of magic. You know, famously, Bill Murray and Harold Ramis were making two different movies for Groundhog Day, and, you know, it still came out perfect. One thing I want to talk about, since you brought up the singing, this is a musical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he sings three full songs. And like it starts with skeet shooting, and
yeah, again, skeet shooting. The opening is amazing.
Any other movie would have cut that gag after 30 seconds and moved on, but these guys were patient enough to know it just keeps getting funnier.
Yeah.
They zoom in on his Billboard chart. Every single one of his songs is about skeet shooting.
Yeah,
it's got Skeet USA, Skeet City, Your Skeetin' Heart. Tammy Wynette.
Yeah.
So this movie doesn't take the song lightly. When they go to a song, they give you a whole freaking song. And he like that. Are You Lonesome Tonight?
Mm-hmm.
That's almost the whole song.
Yeah.
I gotta mention my favorite gag. But just I don't want to forget is the ballet dancer boner.
Oh yes.
And this is another thing these guys do is they layer their jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So first you see a ballet guy with a huge boner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's hilarious
mm-hmm.
because you would think that would happen more often.
Well, and also that's all you, when you watch ballet, that's all you can focus on sometimes is like, do yes. they have a bulge there, right there, that spot? And they've decided to accentuate it. Like, that's all you're going to be looking at anyway. So boom, you know.
And so then they cut and there's more guys and they all have boners too. That's the second level of the dream. Mm-hmm. Then the ballerinas start dancing across them like yeah. they're platforms.
Yes, yes.
We've reached a new plateau of silly.
Yeah.
And the movie does this constantly where I feel like even I would just stop with the one joke and they just keep piling on different mm-hmm. layers to tweak the joke. And I couldn't stop giggling at the boner guys.
One thing they've always been good at, you'll notice hints of Airplane in this, especially when... I wish I remembered the actress's name in this, but when she's recalling when she met the guy with the blonde curly hair and everything like that,
Nigel, yeah,
Nigel. It's a whole Blue Lagoon spoof. Now, yeah. now they don't do this Blue Lagoon spoof like what we would see later on in the Pale Imitators, you know, where it's they've got to basically just, I don't know, throw it in your face. You know, it's yeah. not the fact that it's Blue Lagoon that they're doing. It's they just throw in gags that are so good that don't require you to know what Blue Lagoon is to
spearfishing the bananas.
Yeah, spearfishing bananas. And the sex scene where there's like more hands and legs than there are people in the whole thing that enough people to have the capacity to have in there, you know, just a lot of things like that. Oh man. And then you just keep thinking about stuff like the first time they kiss in the movie, there's a fireplace and then the camera moves over and there's another fireplace. And later on, when they parachute out of the plane, first off, he parachutes and goes past her, and she goes, "Hold on a minute." And so he's able to like move back up in the parachute. And then she decides, you know, I don't know if I'm so confused as to whether or not, you know, I love him or if I love you and blah, blah, blah. And then they end up kissing anyway. And then camera pans over. There's a fireplace parachuting down with them.
Yeah, if I didn't make this clear, this was my first viewing of this film ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I messaged Chris, I believe right around the boner ballerina thing,
mm-hmm.
Telling him I was having the time of my life and I might even enjoy it as much as Airplane.
Yeah.
But yeah, for whatever reason, you know, I've seen Airplane, you know, a dozen times. I've seen Naked Gun a dozen times, but I'd never seen Top Secret. You're right. It just somehow fell between the cracks.
It's gotten lost because I don't know if it's just because it was their sophomore effort and people were like, well, we know what we got with Airplane. We don't need to see this all over again. Maybe that's what people were thinking. And maybe it was just the confusing nature of the plot itself. Like, Airplane movies were a big, huge deal in the 70s. There were so many airplane disaster movies. So when Airplane came out, that was something that everybody sort of recognized. Something needed to get skewered yeah. there. With Top Secret, they're doing these World War II kind of movies where it's not war exactly. It's a lot of espionage and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But I don't think people understood why is there a singer who's like Elvis being thrown into this whole, you know, this whole thing. And I think people got confused by it. I need to look into when it got released too. Normally I'd have that information at my fingertips, but I am unprepared today.
It could have gotten stomped.
It could have gotten stomped by something else. Cause, you know, 1984 was a pretty good year for 1980s movies. It's something that I hope gets a renaissance. I showed this to my nephew who had just happened to come by over the past weekend. We always have this sort of a movie marathon thing when he comes out I was like, what do you want to see? I said, you know, I really need to see this movie Top Secret again because I'm going to do the podcast on Tuesday. If you don't mind watching that. And he was like, okay, you know, it's just, I'll do it or whatever. And he had never seen in Top Secret before. and he was rolling. He loved Top Secret.
I love how everything this week has the endorsement of one of your family members.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's so weird. And but he liked that so much, he ended up we ended up watching The Naked Gun afterwards. Had not seen The Naked Gun either. And I was like, it's going to be interesting for you to watch this after Top Secret now, because I'm wondering if you'll like this better than that. And who knows? There might be some biases there. But he liked Top Secret better than The Naked Gun.
Oh, so. Interesting. I think it's probably time for the surprise super secret double feature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do it.
Shh. Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
This is probably as hamstrung as I've ever felt, just in terms of it really feels like this should be paired with Hot Shots.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a perfectly fine double feature. And you know, they both kind of have that war hero kind of thing. I thought for a little bit, like, because I ultimately didn't want to be tied to another parody film. So I thought for a little bit about State and Maine, just because I think there are a lot of good visual sight gags in that,
yeah,
as well as good dialogue. Mm-hmm. But I want to make that a Maine recommend someday.
Yeah, yeah.
So I decided the theme for my double feature is going to be young Val Kilmer, and we're going to go with Real Genius.
Yeah, Real Genius is great.
Real Genius, which for me is most known as the movie where they tear apart the bully's car and put it back together in his dorm room.
Yes!
This is a movie about super nerds who are being manipulated by the head of the school who's having them build a laser for the military. Don't come looking for serious plot here. It is almost, it's not a parody film, but I feel like it's that same vibe of Val Kilmer that we're getting. He's sort of the former Wunderkind student who is now kind of a goofball, but he's still a genius.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that would be a really fun, with the exception of the, you know, pleasuring my wife joke, for the whole family double feature of goofy, silly Val Kilmer.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I would go with Real Genius.
Yeah, that's a good one. By the way, one of our chat, Slab, says that Top Secret came out in the third week of Ghostbusters and Gremlins and the fifth week of Temple of Doom. I actually remember that back in 1984, I watching Ghostbusters and Gremlins pretty close together in theaters. Those were some of my earliest movie theater experiences, were those movies. If that were today, the third week of those movies and the fifth week of Temple of Doom would not be a big deal, because the turnover is so great now with movies. So a third week of something or a fifth week of something isn't a big deal. Back in 1984 was a huge deal, because people were going in mass to stuff like Ghostbusters, Gremlins, and Temple of Doom. And that's what occupied everybody's time. So like anything that came out in that area was going to get stomped.
He says it came out, it was seventh on its opening weekend.
Yeah.
Because it was still beat by Karate Kid and Search for Spock.
Yeah, yeah.
What a year.
Yeah, definitely. 1984, incredible.
next week, your homework, I'm going to go with Blindspotting.
Yeah, Blindspotting.
This is a movie that I have recommended before on a previous show, but I want to give it the Recotopia deep dive recommend. It's got funny moments and it's got serious moments, but I don't think it's going to be quite as heavy as that run we had back before we went on a comedy tear.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be as funny as Top Secret or Arsenic and Old Lace.
Right.
I'm looking here to see if I can find where you can stream this. Oh, lots of places. Amazon Prime, the Roku channel, Hulu with the premium subscription. On Stars, if you subscribe to Stars, or you can rent it from anywhere. Blindspotting tells a story of two friends who are movers, basically, in Oakland, California. And it speaks to gentrification and race and all sorts of police shootings, all sorts of really, really timely stuff, handled in a very, very unique way. If you haven't seen it, I'm pushing you over the cliff. You're going to watch Blindspotting for next
week. Yeah, Daveed Diggs and an unrecognizable, I believe it's Ethan Embry, right? Ethan Embry is in this, who you see a couple of times and you're like, huh, I wonder if I think I remember this guy from something. And then like, then suddenly you're like, oh, Empire Records. but he's a lot older. He's a lot older now. Blindspotting is terrific. I'll look forward to seeing that again. I've seen this movie 2 or 3 times, I think. So I'll be looking forward to seeing it again.
Yeah. And me too. I haven't seen it in probably, I would say, about 2 years. So I'm looking forward to diving back in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's do some questions.
Questions.
We've got some time for some
questions. Everybody, I have a question.
Just one more thing.
I want the truth.
I know more than you.
What movie helps you go from stressed out to calm? Now, I'll preface this by saying not everybody's going to have a movie that does this for them. Some people de-stress with, you know, listening to Manchester Orchestra's album start to finish or reading or going for a walk. And not everybody has a movie that can calm them down. Mm-hmm. But Chris, do you have an answer for this question?
Yeah, I there's never been a time where I've been stressed out and I'm like, let's pop in this movie. So I haven't ever had that situation and there's not a go-to, but I imagine if there was a go-to, it would be The Big Lebowski. The Big Lebowski is just one of these movies that's got kind of everything in it. I felt like it was my discovery back in that day, because nobody watched The Big Lebowski when it first came out. Now it's like one of the most popular Coen Brothers movies of all time. But back when it came out, this was their follow-up to Fargo, and nobody really saw it. And I thought this movie was hilarious, man. Oh, my God. It was so good, and it's got so many moments in it, so many, like, dreamlike moments. It's just funny. It's just constant. If I were to pick one that were to knock my stress down, that's the movie I'd pop in.
So I'm going to go with a really weird answer. I almost went with The Martian because everybody knows that's one of my very favorite movies. Mm-hmm. I've seen a bazillion times, and it probably does have that effect.
Martian's my travel movie, by the way. Like, I've watched The Martian on my phone 100 times, it seems like.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Die Hard 2 for a very, very specific reason.
Die Hard 2.
I had never seen Die Hard or Die Hard 2 until my sophomore year of college. Now, I was not allowed to go to movies as a kid, so I didn't really go to the theater to see movies much at all until I got to college. And at that point, I was going to the theater. I was watching stuff like Shawshank Redemption. I was not trying to fill my back catalog list of shame. One day, I got the flu, and the flu sucks. And my girlfriend at the time went to the video store and rented Die Hard 2. This was a pretty good gesture. Mm-hmm. Went to Walgreens and got me a bunch of cough medicine and cold medicine, and some fruit punch or something to drink to keep my fluids up, and brought me this care package. And I laid in my bed in my dorm room on my little VCR TV sitting on a desk, and I watched Die Hard and Die Hard 2 in an absolute medicinal funk. it was an unforgettable experience. Mm-hmm. I loved them both intensely, immediately. I still love Die Hard 2 way more than I should, because it gives me memories of the media is connected to memories for me. And so I can get some of those feelings back that I had in that cocoon of blankets when by putting on Die Hard 2.
So, mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's kind of a weird answer, but I think it works.
Yeah, Die Hard 2 is one of those movies, like, it's clearly not as good as the first one, but, like, it has so many, I don't know, it's got so much ridiculousness to it. It's more of a go along with it kind of action movie than you'll see, like, that you'll ever see. There's so much nonsense in Die Hard 2. It's like, it's worth watching just because of how hilarious it is at times. Yes. Bruce Willis firing that gun full of blanks and full in front of everybody at the airport and not getting gunned down at the same time. Just to prove his point. Like you could have just said they're firing blanks. I can prove it. And then instead he just shot it in the middle of the airport.
And I'm getting a little flack. Somebody says I rewarded that girlfriend with a litany of college girlfriend jokes. And I will tell you, that girlfriend went on to cheat on me. So she did a very nice gesture, but that doesn't mean the relationship was good. And also the college girlfriend jokes are never about a specific girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
All my college relationships were bad. That's sort of where I'm going with that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on to another question. Wait. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite bit of movie trivia? For example, the octopus from Goonies. And I wrote, what octopus?
Apparently there's a deleted scene with an octopus in Goonies. I had to look that up.
Interesting. What do you think, Chris?
I'm sure that if I thought about it even longer, I could come up with some other stuff. But my favorite one recently to talk about is in The Informant, when Matt Damon as Mark Whitaker is in the courtroom doing his speech at the end. Steven Soderbergh told him to act that like he is winning an Oscar. During the thing. So when he's like, wow, it's been a really big ride or whatever he says at the end in the courtroom, he has been directed to act that as if he is winning an Oscar, which is perfect Mark Whitaker, direction, I think.
Yes.
So that's one of my favorite ones to spout out.
Well, I went with the classics that, you know, that the famous Goodfellas kitchen entry from the rear entrance wouldn't happen if they'd been able to shoot as they intended.
Mm-hmm.
That was just on the fly, or that Brad Pitt really broke his wrist in 7 when he's running across the cars in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just wrote his wrist injury into the movie. And,
yeah.
I mean, what else are you going to do?
Yeah. Apathy on the chat says American Psycho about the scary detective. I believe that what being referred to there is that Mary Harron, the director of American Psycho, told him to act it like he knew that Christian Bale was behind it, was the murderer, and then to act like he didn't know in several scenes, and then they combined the scene so that you never know where Defoe is in that whole thing. Like you're almost certain he knows in certain parts, and then you're like, well, I don't think he knows anything now. Well, you know, so it's the movie is deliberately confusing. I love that part. Yeah.
This one from Slab about Stand By Me is outrageous. Kiefer Sutherland claimed in an interview that in one of the locations of the film, a Renaissance fair was being held, and the cast and crew attended and bought some cookies. Unfortunately, the cookies turned out to be pot cookies.
Oh.
2 hours later, the crew found Jerry O'Connell crying and high on the cookies somewhere in the park.
Oh, my God.
be laughing. That's terrible.
It's amazing. There's also the classic one that Spielberg couldn't show the shark in Jaws because he couldn't get it to work, and of course that turned out to be a good thing for him. JC says in Titanic they figured out what happened to the actual grand staircase when the scene being shot caused the set to begin to float.
Wow.
So yeah, good stuff.
All right. Let's do one or two more here.
All right.
What is a movie that gave you tears of joy? And I wrote down as a caveat, this is not as easy as it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You have an answer for this one.
Yeah, I mean, Coda is the first one that comes to mind because, you know, she's singing at the end in front of her family who's not supposed to be in there, and it's really good. Also, even though it's mixed with some melancholy, Dead Poets Society, The Oh Captain, My Captain scene, which of course was brilliantly parodied in a Saturday Night Live skit a couple of years ago. But the Oh Captain, My Captain skit, because that was their chance of saying thank you to Mr. Keating at the end, and basically saying, we know you're not to blame and all that. That scene always got me as I watched it. Yeah.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live has ruined that scene for me, because every time I even think of it, I picture them getting their heads chopped off by ceiling fans.
Right, yeah.
I wrote down Dances with Wolves, particularly at the end, where the native guy is yelling from the ridge, Shimani Totoko Omoshi, basically, can't you see that I have always been your friend?
Yeah.
Getting chills right now. I think I might like Dances with Wolves more than most people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is viewed as one of those Oscar winners that maybe shouldn't have won.
I don't know. It's weird. And maybe if you took a poll, a larger sample size poll, but every time I've brought up the whole Dances with Wolves beat Goodfellas or whatever back in 1990, a lot of people were like, well, I really, really like Dances with Wolves. Dances with Wolves is really good. I don't think a lot of people like, maybe, I don't know, maybe back then, maybe a few years after it came out, people were saying, oh, not deserving. But I think over the years, Dances with Wolves has grown in stature. I don't think it's lessened in stature at all. Over in the comments, we have Avengers Endgame from On Your Left and When He Yells Assemble. That's a good one. I will say this. I didn't feel it when I watched it in the theater. But watching the footage of people reacting to that and seeing the people who these movies really mean a lot to reacting to it made me feel that way. But watching the movie on my own did not make me feel that way. In fact, I felt cynical about the On Your Left when I saw it. So,
you know, I think I prefer to watch a movie in an environment where people are not going to scream and cheer because I'm half deaf and I'm already missing a lot of dialogue anyway. But I turned a corner a few years ago about that kind of thing. It used to really bother me, and now I think I can just see the joy that those people have, even if I'm not experiencing that same joy. Even Spider-Man No Way Home, I'm softened on, just because I still think it's the ice capades, but some people cry tears of joy at those ice capades. Just like I saw a video somebody posted a couple weeks ago on social media of a little girl at like a Frozen stage show, and Elsa came out singing Let It Go, and this little 5-year-old girl is bawling tears of joy.
Yeah,
that it's ice capades, but she's having a moment. So why I Multiverse of Madness. I think I was cynical about all those cameos, and then I started hearing about how much they meant to so many people. I'm like, oh, okay, let people have their fun.
Yeah.
And you're right. You do kind of experience a little bit of that joy watching those, especially those Endgame clips of packed theaters that went around for several months of just people losing their shit.
And we've talked about crowd reactions a bunch on all the podcasts. There's nothing better than crowd reactions. Like the I had that growing up watching sports and watching crowds going insane when a home run got hit or something like that, and loving it. And so when I see now, I was in a packed theater when Endgame came out. I saw it at that midnight or whatever. And I'm not even the biggest Marvel person, but I was there on opening night watching Endgame. Did not have that same feeling. I think there were people who maybe cheered during that scene, probably obviously did. But something about watching it from afar, watching those videos and watching a crowd going nuts about that type of stuff. A little bit different.
Yep. Yep. All right, everybody. I think that's probably going to do it for this week. Shout out to our live chat peeps. I appreciate you. I like seeing mostly the same names every week, and we're developing our own running jokes. If you're not a part of that, we record almost every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time. And if you are at a certain level of patron perks over at the CinemaSins Patreon, you can watch and listen live while we record. Everybody else listens when the show drops on Monday mornings, and we love you people too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So thank you guys for coming in and listening to us. Next week is Blind Spotting, so we'll see you next time. See ya.
Goodbye.
Bye. Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com. For a minute there, I was having trouble hearing you, but I think it's because you were just away from the mic a little bit.
How about now?
Yeah, I think I can hear you fine now.
I did a funny voice there, too. That's probably not helpful. Maybe I'm just thinking of my video game hockey where I played as HockeyBot 2000 and I maxed out all of his skills so that he was the fastest, the strongest, and the best sniper.
Yeah, it's amazing how you could just kind of cheat on those sports games. I don't know if you can do that anymore, but like when I had the Genesis, like I had all the early EA Sports stuff. And so like I would always turn offsides off. And like little things like that in the hockey game, and every breakaway that I had would get a goal somehow. Was it in football? I would always play the all Madden team versus the Patriots, who were terrible, of course, at the time. all you had to do was just hand it to one guy, and he'd just running down the field with it, never get tackled. It's showtime, and let's have some fun.